What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. You all right there?
I couldn't hear the station feed, so I was like turning the volume up. Yep. Imagine, and then when you spoke, it just like
hit you like a lightning bolt. You're like, ah!
You know what? I'm having that kind of day, man. Like everything I've done all day, just like it got to the point where I'd had like three or four bad bounces in a row this morning. Not consequential ones, by the way. Mm-hmm. Like I'm talking about just like little stuff that aggravates you over the course of a day. And I got home from a walk in which like my dog had pulled and like just like a lot of little stuff was off. And I get to the sink and I turn it on. I turn on my faucet to wash my hands after cleaning my dog. And I ripped the entire faucet right off the sink.
And I was you don't know your own strength.
I was just like, oh my God, this is... So that was another one where I'm like, oh, I can't hear the station feed. And then you start talking. Rah!
There you go.
Anyway, I had a bad fantasy football loss last night, so I think I'm just reeling, man.
I would characterize the Canucks talk mood today as grumpy.
Yeah.
We're both cranky.
Yeah. So me, for fantasy football reasons, a devastating loss to both Halford and Chris Faber.
Tough.
But you...
My couch.
Your Purolator couch.
Purolator. They're not a sponsor, so I can call them out. I'm mad at Purolator.
You were on hold for 25 minutes before the
show. I didn't get through.
You never. And then you said you won this round, and I told you they were also going to win every subsequent round.
I came on a week ago and was like, I'm so excited, guys. I ordered a new couch, and it's in Richmond, and it's going to be delivered today or tomorrow. And since then, it's been... quote, delayed in transit due to misconnection like five times, and Purolator has no idea what's going on. So that's fun.
You know what this
is? I'm enjoying it.
You know what this is? It's a couch tease. You're being couch teased.
I am being couch teased.
I'm sorry.
I could have been sitting on it all weekend, and instead, haven't been. It's really tough.
Instead, my place of seating is lumpy and uncomfortable.
It's true. It is.
Sorry, man.
Oh, man. Anyway, so we'll try to use the show to pick up our mood a little bit here on a Monday. We are, of course, coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet. What are you waiting for? 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. So you can send your thoughts and comments in to the show. Kevin Woodley, always a pleasure, is going to join us at 1 o'clock. We'll get his thoughts on the Canucks win, their upcoming road trip as well, and a lot to get into after the weekend. So let's go right to the whiteboard.
All right now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, November 25th, starting with the headlines. The Canucks start their six-game road trip with a pretty impressive 4-3 win in Ottawa. And obviously, a couple of late goals from the Senators make the scoreline look a lot closer than the game felt for long stretches. But still, despite those late goals, that, I think, was a really important win for the Canucks. And we've talked so much about the vibes around this team, right? And obviously it came to a head a little bit last week with the JT Miller news that he's taking a leave of absence for personal reasons. That win, I'm willing to bet the vibes in the locker room were the best of the season after that win. When you consider the circumstances, not having JT Miller, not having Brock Besser, Thatcher Demko, losing Quinn Hughes in the first period, the identity they played with, the defensive structure they played with, and then causing the Ottawa Senators to just lose composure in the third period as well, playing keep away with the puck. There was a lot to not just feel good about based on how you were playing, but to kind of have fun with if you were a Canucks player. And again, as I said, I'm willing to bet the vibes were exceptional in the locker room after that win.
Yeah, a lot of mojo, you'd think, coming out of that game. Not just the... You know, it was the second straight performance in which the team played well, too, mm-hmm. because they were good against the Rangers. Not great, but good. And that matters. You know, this team hasn't started well far too regularly. I think there's a sense internally that there's been a habit of lacking focus and energy and work rate, frankly. Attention to detail. Slipping into playing selfishly, mm-hmm. right? The same commitment we saw last year, this term's hyper-discipline. In terms of playing, quote-unquote, the right way, yep. as the club would frame it internally, has been a little bit too absent. And I do wonder, by the way, Jamie, not to get too 30,000-foot view here, but I do wonder to what extent, as we kind of discussed a little bit on Friday, that lack of evident buy-in that we've seen too frequently, or at least the inconsistency with which this group has looked bought in, certainly in comparison with last year, shapes the club being like, can we afford to part with futures?
Yeah.
You know, like, I think there's a lot at stake in terms of this group of players, too, getting back to the level they were last season, where this club was pushing assets and more assets chasing the short term, in part, as Alvin and Jim Rutherford both explicitly said on the record on multiple occasions, this group of players has earned it. Well, a performance like that one in Ottawa, I think, goes a long way toward...
Those are the types of performances that, if you stack them up, make you earn it, right? That's what allows you to earn the aggressiveness from the front office.
It makes the obligation of doubling down on this particular iteration of the team overwhelming, right? You lose Quinn Hughes. It was a harsh but ultimately automatic call. I actually felt a little bad for the referees once I wrapped my head around exactly what had occurred, because once you decide that it's a major penalty, and I think you can argue whether or not it should have been a minor or a major, but at the very least it's borderline. I think it's reckless enough given Norris's positioning, and then obviously once he has the facial injury because his nose hits the dasher, it's a battle gone wrong to me more than it's a dirty hit. But you do have to be careful about hitting a guy in the numbers along the wall like that. And then obviously because of the facial injury, the officials have no, it's automatic. Once you decide it's a major, it's automatic that the player must be tossed, game misconduct. So they play all but 2.5 minutes without Quinn, in addition to lacking Besser, in addition to lacking Miller, in addition to lacking Thatcher Demko, in addition to lacking even Derek Forbert. And, you know, I thought they put in their most complete defensive effort of the season until the game got to 5-on-6 defending and then very sloppy. But, you know, no harm, no foul. Overall, Ottawa couldn't find the inner slot with a map. Vancouver's defensive game looked great. The top line took it over, which is, you know, becoming a real storyline here. Eric Brännström played top pair minutes at 5-on-5, including a heavy dose of minutes against Brady Tkachuk and Tim Stützle. That's a level of, like, a quality of competition that he's very rarely faced. Over the course of the season, I think he passed that first test with flying colors. I mean, they played keep away for 2 minutes and did it so effectively that by the end, the Ottawa Senators had a 5-on-3. They had a 2-minute 5-on-3 against the Senators as a result. So they annoyed them. They got under their skin. They got them off their game. They kept them out of the slot.
Yep.
They scored off the rush. They played the right way. And, yeah, I mean, probably need to work on some 6-on-5 defending here, especially without... Is that, by the way, one thing I was thinking as the Senators piled on goals, I'm curious to get your take on this. Felt like that was a moment where they really missed JT Miller and his ability to just, like, get in the way of a play and then deposit the puck neatly into the net from 90 feet away. He's so good at it.
Well, and who's their other ace empty net guy? It's Brock Besser.
Brock Besser, yeah.
Right? So, I mean, that's a key situation for those guys.
And Tanner Pearson and Louis Eriksson and Bo Horvat. Like, let's be real. This team's lost a lot of closers.
They have.
So I honestly was watching it and I was just like, I feel like this is the moment where JT Miller is like elite 5-on-6 defending. Maybe we should be giving him more credit for that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, that empty net thing's a skill, man.
Oh, totally.
It's impressive, and it's a huge thing to salt away games, right? So I think it's a good shout by you that, yeah, they were missing him in that situation. And you mentioned it, you know, just in terms of the formula that helped them win that game, which was the top line dominating. The top line really clicking, really cooking, right? And obviously that's Pettersson with DeBrusk and Sherwood. And, you know, Sherwood is getting a lot of the love today, understandably so. But Jake DeBrusk has a couple goals. Pettersson picks up a couple of assists, looked really strong again. And just in the short term, if you have a formula of a team that's working hard and really locked into a defensive identity, plus that line cooking, you can hold the fort and then some if that's your formula in the short term in the regular season. Like, that's a regular season formula. Yeah. It's not a Stanley Cup formula. But for right now, while you're missing some of these key bodies, that formula can take you a long way in the regular season.
Also, if this line can perform like a top line, then you get a Miller, Besser, maybe it's Pugh Suter or whomever
like
line underneath it. And then you have Garland and Joshua back on the third line once this team gets a little healthier. I mean, that becomes pretty potent, right? That becomes three lines that you look at as being top six caliber easily. Well, that's a huge edge. And what we're seeing right now from that line, I mean, we're talking 67% of shot attempts, 57-28 against. in their minutes. We're talking a 6-1 margin on the scoreboard. Not too shabby.
No.
And we're talking about an 80% plus margin of expected goals in their 44 minutes together. Now, is that going to be sustainable as the sample expands? No. Is 6-1, like, if they go on a 30-game stretch outscoring their opponents 6-1, they're historically good. That's, like, the best line we've ever seen. So we do expect that to come back to earth a little bit. Like, Kiefer Sherwood, for example, leading all Canucks forwards in 5-on-5, all Canucks players in 5-on-5 offense with 12 points of forwards. I think he might be tied with Quinn.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he surpassed him in the Ottawa game. Has 105 PDO, right? Like, he has a 13%, 13.5% on-ice shooting clip. I shouldn't be a hot take to be like, hey, I doubt Kiefer Sherwood ends the season first on the Canucks in scoring at 5-on-5. But the stuff that they're doing is so good, and it's real. It's good hockey stuff, right? It's not smoke and mirrors. It's not a line that's getting lucky. It's a line that's playing really great and maybe also getting a few bounces in the early going. That to me is real stuff. That's more core of steel, can sort of bank on it. And if they can sustain this level of just stacking up heavy shifts, attacking dynamically off the rush, surrendering very little in on the defensive side of the game, I mean, we could absolutely get 10, 15 games down the road here and say DeBrusk, Pettersson, Sherwood is the Canucks' top line. They're getting the self-match minutes with Hughes, right? Miller's coming in underneath with Besser and Pew Suter or whatever, and that would be an elite second line, right? And all of a sudden, you're talking about a very different just consideration set than where we've been for much of the season, where it's like Garland's the only guy driving 5-on-5. You know, does this team have enough push? Can they get enough going on? Can they get enough positive things happening when Quinn Hughes is on the ice? You know, this has the potential to be one of those things that meaningfully lifts this club ceiling.
Yeah, and it's also, as you say, if they start to get more healthy and get especially Miller and Besser back, the forward depth talking point, which I don't think has shown up, right? I mean, obviously we're seeing it with Kiefer Sherwood right now, but then it becomes really more tangible in the way it's helping your team, right? Because then all of a sudden, as you said, you're back to that third line of Garland and Joshua. We know what they can do in that role, and you potentially have two lines really clicking above it. That's a big deal. That could be a really big deal for the identity of this team. And on that line with Sherwood and Pettersson and DeBrusk, you know, again, as I said, it's absolutely worth throwing out the praise for Kiefer Sherwood, because you sign a guy to that deal and, you know, given what he's done at the NHL level, and all of a sudden he's clicking with you in a top line role and helping you control play and helping you score goals, that's an incredible find and he deserves the love. I think it's also really noteworthy that it's Elias Pettersson playing center on that line, right? I almost feel like that is an under-noticed thing right now. I know people are out there saying, hey, Petey's back and all that, and I think we're in this kind of weird moment where we're waiting for the true supernova game from Elias Pettersson, where he has 5 points and just like embarrasses the other team, right? That we've seen from him when he's at his best. That's fine. That's fine to have that expectation for him. He's capable of doing it. But it's also really notable that he's driving a top caliber line right now as the center. Like, we haven't seen that from Elias Pettersson in a long time. We haven't seen an Elias Pettersson line put up these types of play controlling numbers in a long time. That counts. Maybe it's not the highlight reel stuff we see from him at his best, but it's still really important that he's capable of doing that right now.
Yeah, I'm starting to think he's back. I'm starting to think he's back.
If he's not officially back, he's right on the cusp.
Yeah.
Like, to the point where if he does have a 4-point highlight reel night, it's like, okay, now he's back. You know what I mean? It's like, I can see just waiting for that last kind of thing to click, but everything else, the underlying impact, the point production has started to come back. He looks faster on his skates to me. Like, everything else has started to come back, and it has come back for Elias Pettersson.
Right, yeah, now. I mean, he has 2 or more points in 4 of his last 7 games, right? That's a streak that includes, you know, 10 points overall, 4 goals, 6 assists. That's nasty stuff. Mm-hmm. That's nasty, nasty business at the moment from Elias Pettersson. You know, I've been sort of waiting for that, like, next level of it in terms of just the elusiveness, which I still think is, it's like he's having this success, but it's by playing really directly, just direct, smart, hard work in hockey. And I love to see that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I guess what I'm sort of suggesting to you is, as good as that is, I still think there's a gear beyond
there's
that.
A gear of, like, game-breaking stuff.
Yes.
That's left, that still has to get back. it would be very surprising to see him get to this level for me and not eventually attain that next level. You know what I mean? Like, it seems like it's only a matter of time.
We know what this guy is, man. Yeah. We've always known what this guy is, you know? I don't know why, but we're going to... Do you think we're just going to keep doing this, like, every 2 years when he's not playing at the level of, like, a clear top seven centerman in the league? Every time that happens, it's like, is he a 40-point forward?
It depends how long the next slump is.
Oh, man.
That's really what it's going to come down
to. So, yeah. Well, look, in fairness, he has had multiple, like, 40-plus gamers, right, over the last 3-4 years. So, I tend to think they've been injury-related, but injury-related impacting his confidence, blah, blah, blah. I still think, I guess, sort of the overwhelming takeaway that I have, if we are, in fact, out of this, and as we get out of it, right? One thing that I notice, I do think there's like a B-game level that he still needs to find. The way to succeed when things aren't right. And we know what he can do when things are. But, you know, that idea of like a temperamental or you know, sophisticated instrument in terms of his calibration. And if, you know, one or two things are off, maybe it hurts him more than it hurts your average player. That's still something that's now in the back of my mind with him, because we have seen that bottom fall out on his performance in a way that, you know, I don't think we have from a guy like JT Miller.
I normally don't buy the, oh, that's a streaky player or that's an inconsistent player label, because, like, that's just hockey.
Yeah, I also don't think he is inconsistent.
Well, but isn't not having your B game part of being, like, you know what I mean? So, but maybe there's a semantic argument there, but, like, I am starting to buy it in his case. You know what I mean? Where I won't be shocked if next year or whatever he picks up a wrist injury and he's playing, but it looks off for 20 games or something. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Okay.
I agree with you that you want to find the way to still minimize the drop off. That would be ideal. But I'm not going to be shocked if we see it again, because we've seen it a couple times already from him, right?
Yeah, and probably we should figure out a way of talking about it that's not streaky, right? Like, yes. I think there's some... You're not wrong. There's something there. I just don't think streaky is the right
label. Probably doesn't capture it or inconsistent or whatever.
We've got all season.
That's right. We'll figure it out. And then I guess the other part of it for me is, okay, if you... Whatever we want to call it, right? This thing where when it's good, it's exceptionally good, but the drop-off can be steep. The question for me is... If they make the playoffs this year, where's his game at during the playoffs?
Yeah.
Right, that's going to be so key for this team. We talk about their window and everything, but if you are, at least in the present, you recognize that there's going to be these ups and downs in Pedersen's game, man, you really want the up to coincide with the playoffs if this team does, in fact, make it this year. Broadsheet, now this is not directly Canucks related, but the news, the report from Elliot Friedman today, the New York Rangers, not entirely satisfied of how their season is going, potentially looking to shake things up, making both defenseman Jacob Trouba available, which is not that much of a surprise. We remember they were trying to move him in the summer. He has no trade protection. It didn't happen. But also Chris Kreider, which is much more of a surprise to me. I mean, Chris Kreider is like, isn't he closing in on being the Rangers' all-time leading goal scorer?
Yeah.
As like a long-serving, extremely productive member of that organization. Now, I would be really surprised if the Rangers trade Chris Kreider during the season this year. I would be really, really surprised. But just the fact that his name is out there is notable. Probably the more relevant name from a Canucks perspective is Trouba, right? Anytime big name right shot defenseman, veteran right shot defenseman is available, who plays with an edge, who plays physically, I think it's going to land on Canucks fans' radar. I don't really see it, but worth throwing out there at least that Elliot Friedman reporting he could be on the market again.
Yeah, I mean, I think Trouba's a part of the issue in New York, so... Yep. You know, would the Canucks look at it as one of those players that they could have more success with because of Tocchet's defensive system? Maybe. I mean, we know at the very least that Trouba is the sort of player that opponents will keep their head up around.
Yes.
But I just don't know that he's getting there anymore, to be totally honest with you. And I've thought that for a couple of years, but it's really prominent right now. Like, the Rangers' issue right now is as follows. They allow 25 shots against per hour with Adam Fox on the ice. Every other defender in their lineup, with the exception of Keandre Miller, who plays with Adam Fox, is over 30. And some of them are like mid-30s. Well, that's too much, right? And so what you're seeing right now from the Rangers, and you saw it on this road trip, you know, they were better than Vancouver when they played in Vancouver on Tuesday. But every time the Canucks got a scoring chance, it was like a five-alarm, you know, 10 bell,
yep.
Unbelievable high caliber scoring chance, taking an absolute can opener to the Rangers defensive structure. Then they go to Calgary, and Calgary peppers them with like 50 shots. So Calgary did the volume thing to them, and then they go to Edmonton, and Edmonton did both and also put up a crooked number on the scoreboard. That, to me, like, when you're getting beat in various different ways by various different teams, that's something that I always look at and say, that team might be in real trouble defensively. And a ton of the underlying stuff, including SportLogic having them as mm-hmm. you know, the 31st team in terms of surrendering rush chances against and on, you don't want to be in the company of the Pittsburgh Penguins in terms of your defensive metrics, and the Rangers are at the moment. Scary stuff.
I think you take into consideration the performance stuff and the fact that it's an $8 million cap hit, and it's just way too much opportunity cost if you're actually going after Jacob Trouba, right? There's going to be better options and cheaper options in terms of AAV on the market at some point, I got to think. So I don't really see it as a fit. But again, big name,
yep,
right shot defenseman, you never
fun
know.
Fun to think of.
Is it? But at least worth thinking about,
hey,
that the Canucks could be interested.
It's always fun to think about trades.
That's true. All right, lineup notes. Update from practice in Boston. Brock Besser, a full participant in practice per our Sportsnet colleagues Dan Murphy and Ian McIntyre, skating on a line with Teddy Bluger and Danton Heinen. So we didn't get the full lineup tweet from either of our colleagues there, but Ian McIntyre noted that Tocchet not splitting up the Pettersson, Sherwood, DeBrusk line that's having a lot of success right now. You would also think probably not splitting up Suter, Joshua, and Garland. So that would lead me to believe then you have Bluger, Besser, and Heinen, and Hoglander bumps down to the fourth line. But great news that Brock Besser continues to trend in a positive direction, taking that next step, a full participant with contact in practice today in Boston.
Yeah, and sounds like Thatcher Demko also, per Dan Murphy, through
via Rick Dhaliwal, via us now,
yeah, was a full participant in practice as well, and looked good according to Dan Murphy. We'll talk more with that about that with Kevin Woodley at 1 p.m. Besser's recovery timeline here now is almost an exact match with what you'd expect from a player in the concussion protocol.
Yep.
Despite the team having never confirmed it. I don't know. How should we handle that? Like, should we just be adults about it and like,
say,
I think
he
it's
had
a pretty
concussion?
Safe assumption?
Like, probably, honestly. I mean, do we cover our bases thing where it's like presumed? Yeah, or
no,
a parent?
No, I think we can go more than presumed. Yeah. I think we can say something like a parent.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Something like that.
Great to see that he's back or getting close to being back and may return on
tomorrow.
You know, tomorrow.
Potentially,
Tuesday,
yep,
in Boston. And, hey, you can't split that top line right now.
No.
I think that's apparent. Like,
no, you
honestly
can't bump Kiefer Sherwood down.
No.
Absolutely
no
not.
Chance. He's your leading scorer 5-on-5.
Let's go. Kiefer Sherwood. So those are your
Is
lineup
that the
notes.
Signing of the offseason, by the way? Kiefer?
By any NHL team?
Yeah.
I'd have
Just
to
like
look.
The guy that you pick up on the waiver wire that wins you your fantasy championship?
I have to think. I mean, I think there's an argument to be made, Dom, that you'd still put Lankin in first for this team, to be totally honest with you.
You can have the argument for sure, yeah.
Because, like, if...
But there is an argument.
Given how Shelovs and Patera have performed, like, if this team had rolled out a Shelovs-Patera duo, you know, as good as Sherwood's been, like, the value of replacement in goal that Lankinen has provided, given how Vancouver's depth goaltending is held up. Like, I wouldn't even put Sherwood number one among the Canucks from a impactful free agent signing this summer,
Maybe
to be totally
I'm just
honest with you.
Biased because I like how Kiefer plays.
Well, Kiefer's the hot
Kiefer's
thing.
Kiefer's
right
awesome.
Now. Yeah. And he's been great.
Yeah, he's been fantastic. I'm casting zero aspersions on Kiefer Sherwood, to be so clear. Just that, you know, the Canucks have had a few of them.
Like, mm-hmm,
the Brännström trade wasn't a signing. Lankinen and Sherwood, I think, have all been, like, not season-saving, but have certainly... Key parts of holding the fort. I think without any... You remove any one of those three, and I think the start looks awfully different.
Yeah, I think that's fair. All right, quick playoff odds update. Now, I believe the Canucks' odds of making the playoffs per Dom's model have actually dropped slightly despite the win since we did this last, which I think is just a product of a lot of other Pacific Division and Western Conference teams picking up wins recently as well. But having said that, they're still at 91% to make the playoffs and still projected to finish with 103 points.
By the way, I think it's Sean Monahan.
Best signing.
I've considered this at length. I think it's Sean Monahan. I've been considering it ever since Dom brought it up.
At length.
Yeah, Sean Monahan is playing with Marchenko and Voronkov for the Columbus Blue Jackets. They're like destroying teams, like outscoring them like 3-1, 5-on-5, 60+%. He's point per game through 20 games. Like, Monahan's been a man possessed and is fundamentally altered what that team's capable of. So
I think Sherwood, if Sherwood State plays 40 more games with Elias Pettersson, and they're not going, it's not going to look like the stats we read out earlier, obviously, but if it's a first line, right, if they're a legitimate first line quality unit with Sherwood playing next to Pettersson, then I think he's going to be in that discussion. When you factor in the salary,
he's already in that discussion.
Yeah, like that's man, you pick up a guy for $1.5 million and all of a sudden he's helping your top line click. That is a huge, huge bonus. It's especially funny also given the struggles Nashville has had as well.
Well, yeah.
Like, oh, that's tough.
That's made this wide open, right?
It really has. Yeah. It really has. Okay, we'll wrap up the whiteboard there. We can do some betting odds looking at the game tomorrow when they take on the Boston Bruins. We'll take a break here. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. You can send your thoughts in. We got an open segment next, but still lots to get into from the game last night, looking ahead to the rest of the road trip as well. Kevin Woodley will join us at 1 o'clock. More Canucks talk on the way here on Sportsnet 650.